Welcome to Nancy's Bookshelf, a program of conversation and readings with local and regional writers. Now, here's your host, Nancy Wigman.
My guest today has a master's degree in psychology and was a student services administrator at Butte College before retiring. Peggy Jennings Sevier wrote her first book, Life Talks, A Guide to Bringing Back Conversation, to help people create more loving and meaningful relationships. She has now written a follow-up book, Life Talks, The Conversations Continue, which offers a simple yet effective approach to reaching out and connecting with those whom you care about most, no matter what age or shape the relationship is in. Her book provides lists of thought-provoking, open-ended questions to start conversations with parents, partners, children, coworkers, and friends. Peggy Jennings Sevier, welcome.
Thank you.
You know, in addition to author, I could have said poet.
Ah.
And you start your book with a poem, and I would like for you to read that poem, if you would.
Thank you. I titled it Mom. You ushered me in, I escorted you out. You cried with joy, I cried with pain. You held me tight, I let you go. You sang and soothed, so did I. You let me go, I hung on. You knew it was my time, I knew it was yours. You loved my babies, I learned to love yours. You lost count of your blessings, I lost count of the doses. Your breathing slowed down, mine sped up. You ushered me in, I escorted you out.
And this is a poem that my guest, Peggy Jennings Sevier, wrote entitled Mom. And so you wrote this book to honor your mother, but you also tell us things that you believe. So we know why you wrote this book, because of these things you believe. And would you read that little section there?
Sure. I actually had this idea when I saw a TED Talk and Simon Sinek talk about how important it is to tell people why, not the what or the how, but the why. And so I really had to think after the first book, as people talked to or asked me, what was the book about, or why did you write it? I thought, oh, I have to answer the question why. So it came to me these three statements of what I call my value statements or my why statements. I believe that each of us wants to be heard. I believe that each of us wants to connect with others in meaningful ways. I believe that each of us wants to belong. And I believe the Life Talks, A Guide to Bringing Back Conversation, and now the Life Talks, The Conversations Continues, are two tools that can help us accomplish all three of those.
So you tell us in the beginning of your book why you wrote it, these things that you believe. And, you know, I'd like to add, Peggy, I know who you wrote it for, because I'm one of those people. I thought, yes, this is right up my alley. But it may not be for everybody, because some people will be quite self-conscious.
Absolutely.
Following these suggestions that you have for these activities.
Definitely. I mean, I think any kind of change puts us out of our comfort zone. And for some people, verbalizing what they're thinking or feeling is definitely taking them out of their comfort zone. So I in the second book, I put a list together of how to do it, how to go about doing it. And also I got suggestions at workshops that I did after the first book, because it isn't easy. If it were easy, we'd all be doing it routinely. But it's not. It's a challenge, and it takes some skill and it takes some guts to give it a try. And then once you see it be successful, you're more apt to do it again and again.
Because I didn't grow up with my parents asking me what I thought about things or my opinions, or they didn't ask me those questions. I was a child. Children are supposed to be seen and not heard. And you had different parents.
I sure did. I didn't realize they were different until I was in college and I talked to my, especially my women friends, and said, yeah, my parents did this, or they asked me that, or they told me this. And they're like, really? And I thought, oh, maybe I had kind of an unusual childhood. But my parents, from a very early age, wanted to know what we thought and why. Now, they wouldn't leave it at that. They wouldn't necessarily agree with us or support it, and oftentimes challenged our thinking, but they always wanted to know what we were thinking and why, and to a smaller degree, probably what we were feeling, but thinking they definitely were interested in.
Well, in the front of your book, you have a photograph, three generations of women in your family. There you are, surrounded by your mother and your daughter. And I was so then taken with your description of your mother. What was your mother like?
Well, she was, such an interesting lady, and certainly my lifeline. I had, as I mentioned, the first time you interviewed me is I had all older brothers and a very strong, and I would say in some ways domineering father. And so I was the youngest and only girl, and she definitely was my lifeline to feeling heard and appreciated and acknowledged. And throughout my life, she would give me all this kind of tidbit information and advice, sometimes directly, but sometimes by telling stories about especially our neighbors, things that were going on. And again, I thought this was normal, that every mother told their daughters about relationships and such. And I realized again later that that wasn't necessarily the case. But she was just this really salt of the earth, very had this core self-confidence, slow to judge, could keep a secret. So a lot of ladies would show up early morning, mid-morning, coffee clatch, sharing their secrets with my mother. And then she, in turn, would sometimes share them with me.
And about herself, too.
Absolutely about
because
herself.
My mother never talked about what she thought or felt to me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I, like you have come to realize your mother was special.
Mm-hmm.
And there's something that she said that I thought was really nice advice, Peggy. You said of all the advice your mother gave you, one piece in particular has had a lasting impact. And what was that advice?
Well, the advice that she gave me, and probably the one that has stayed with me the longest and obviously was probably a catalyst to writing these two books, is she said, "Peggy, words are powerful and not to be used lightly, because once they are spoken, you can never take them back." And I write about this in the second book. And from the book, I'm going to read this little paragraph. She illustrated her point by telling me about a fight our neighbors, Mr. and Mrs. North, had recently had. Apparently, Mrs. North told her husband in a fit of anger mixed with alcohol that he was an inadequate lover. Being a young teen at the time, I didn't fully understand the complexities of this insult, but I was smart enough to know that her criticism was harsh, highly insensitive, and hit Mr. North below the belt. My mom went on to advise me that no matter how much Miss North apologized or repented the next day, her husband would always be left with doubt regarding his masculinity and attractiveness. Not surprisingly, the Norths divorced several years later, and I never forgot my mother's sound and prophetic advice. And she would tell me those kinds of things and just kind of leave it at that for me to kind of figure it out and interpret it. But as such, in our family, my family, with my children and my husband, as an outcropping of that, we've never allowed each other to call each other names or to say shut up. My husband, being an educator, didn't let our kids say they were bored. They were just looking for things to do. So we always kind of structured our home environment so that words were used especially harsh words were either eliminated or used judiciously.
Well, it being a good listener stood you in good stead, too, because you still are sharing your mother's stories and her wisdom and her insights with your children or your students, mm-hmm. because you have taught at Butte College. You've taught some classes there.
Absolutely.
And so you continue. Her advice and her wisdom lives on.
It does. It's her legacy for sure.
And you say that probably your friends and family get tired of you saying, "My mother used to say."
Oh, gosh, I get tired of it sometimes. And I know they must. But again, it's sound advice that she shared, and it's timeless, I think. So,
well, father then was, his personality was different. But what did you learn from your father?
Well, my father had this unquenchable thirst to learn. And not just from books which he read nonstop, or magazines, or TV news programs, or classes he would take. He wanted to learn from people. He thought people were fascinating, provided you weren't arrogant, because if you were arrogant, he kind of eliminated you right away. But if you were humble and you had something interesting, it didn't matter what your background was, he was curious and interested and wanted to ask you questions about it. And I grew up really with the understanding that one of the ways you show people respect and show interest in them was to ask them questions about themselves and their lives and what they believed in and what they were feeling, that was just natural. So my mom's compassionate, intuition kind of oriented questions, and then my dad's just inquisitive nature, the combination really kind of sparked in me all the things that I write about in both books.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Sevier. She's a psychologist. She was at Butte College as an administrator until she retired. And her new book is Life Talks, The Conversations Continue. Now, in your introduction, you suggest open-ended questions. And why is that important?
Open-ended questions, it sounds so simple. And it really is, to one degree. And that is a question that cannot be answered in a yes or no fashion. And this was taught to me in my counseling training back in grad school by a professor who was there only a short time at Chico State. But he kind of opened the world to me of open-ended questions and how powerful they can be, especially if you're a good listener, because if you don't have the listening skills to go with it, then it might be lost. But just a simple open-ended question can take you all sorts of places that you never expected.
Well, because in those days, the therapist sat there, and if you said the sky is blue, yes, the sky is blue. And whatever you said, it was your job as a therapist.
Just to parrot it back,
mm-hmm.
Yes.
And here you had this professor who had a different point of view.
He kind of opened the world for me because I felt so stilted in this. It was kind of this step-by-step approach that you kind of parrot back what the person said to show understanding and compassion. And I don't demean that at all. Mm-hmm. That's powerful. But it felt like a one-trick pony, and it felt very confined. And so when he said, Peggy, why don't you just start asking them some open-ended questions and let them dictate where the conversation goes, and that really helped.
And inspired your approach to this book that you've written. And then you also talk about traditions. We haven't mentioned much about traditions, but why do you discuss traditions?
Well, you know, again, instinctively, and then later on, as I had a conversation with a group of colleagues at Butte College about it, is I just think traditions provide us an outlet, an opportunity to have those kinds of conversations and connections and a sense of belonging and community on an ongoing basis. And I think it's something that we then can all depend on, and they're predictable, and we can feel confident that they're going to come and that we have that avenue to connect in meaningful ways with people. So I've always felt like how can I build questions into traditions so that on an ongoing basis we have opportunities to have those deep, meaningful conversations with the people that we care about most, as opposed to letting them happen, although they do spontaneously, but just hoping that they'll occur. With traditions, it's kind of you know they're going to occur, and as a result can depend on, at least during those occasions, to have those connections you hope for.
So you emphasize the importance of traditions, of asking open-ended questions. And that was important, too, when it came time to decide about getting married. And, Peggy, I was surprised to learn how young you were when you and your husband met.
Oh, gosh. I am, too. Yes, he was 16 and I was 17. We were in high school. And neither of us had had a we've had certainly boyfriend and girlfriends and went to dances, that kind of thing. But we never really had a serious relationship till we met each other. And it was fast and furious, and we felt like we were totally in love and were even contemplating getting married young, right out of high school, and which mortified my parents.
I would think so. But you know what? And when you're asking these questions, you've just told us about yourself, how you're young and this is a first marriage. But as I looked at the questions, I thought the importance of these questions don't expire after the first marriage, because I know people have friends have been married several times, or women who are widows. And I think these questions that you pose would be helpful at whatever stage somebody's contemplating, maybe not just marriage, because you say, are we ready, this chapter, to commit? So it might not be getting married, we're ready to commit. And the first question, are you both better people because you are in a relationship together?
And I think that's the crux of it. Reese and I both feel, my husband and I both feel that's the bottom line question. Are you better as a result of being in a relationship together than you are apart? And I can say unequivocally that I'm a better parent. I'm a better person. I have more confidence, all those kinds of things as a result of being in a relationship. But that's not true of all relationships. We've all witnessed and seen relationships where it actually detracts from the people that are involved. And you start to see the strengths of each person erode and be compromised. And it's painful to watch that. So that's kind of my litmus test for relationships is, are you a better person? Do you feel like you're at your best? Not always. We can't always be that.
But do you like the kind of person you are because of this relationship?
I like that question. Yes, absolutely.
Or a question like, do you bring out and reinforce the best in each other? Do you share the same values? These are questions that, and how does your partner treat men and women? How do they treat other people?
That's critical. Somebody asked me too one time, and this one I watch a lot, is how do they treat people who don't perceivably have power?
Yes.
And that's another one, is watch how they treat their family, watch how they treat the opposite sex, their friends. But then also, how do they treat somebody when you're out having dinner and someone's waiting on you? How do they treat that person? Because that will give you a great indication of what they're like.
Mm-hmm. Can you make each other laugh?
That was critical for my husband. He's got a great sense of humor. And many of these questions my parents threw at me when I said that I was thinking about
getting married.
They were panicked and so started asking me these questions, which many I couldn't answer at the time, which then led me to make the decision that maybe I need to experience life a little before I get married. And so Reese and I ended up going different directions. He went in the Marine Corps and I went away to college, but we kept in touch and got married 6.5 years later.
Another question, can your partner apologize to you when he or she is at fault? And can you apologize when you are at fault?
Mm-hmm. And these are good questions to ask yourself, but also I think it's a good sign of a good relationship, a healthy relationship, if you can ask each other these questions too.
Mm-hmm. Like, are you willing to put your needs aside on occasion and put your partner's needs first? This is all, it comes down to respect.
Exactly.
Well, you have a chapter in your book about book clubs, and that kind of surprised me. And particularly the nature of this book club that you are a member of, Peggy, because the first question, it happens to be yes or no question, not an open-ended question. And I couldn't be a member of your club because the first question is, do you want white wine or red wine? And I say, well, neither one. Could I have Earl Grey, please?
And we do have some people that prefer just water, but a vast majority of us like our wine. Yeah, and this was a fun one to write because I took it to the book club and shared it, my introduction with them. Because each of the chapters I do try to create a context for it, but also oftentimes from real life experience or situation that I've had. And so my book club is a precious group of women that we've been together over 20 years. And so when I went to them with the introduction, I said, okay, now I want you all to submit some questions to me. And one of our characters in our club sent this to me, and it was the only question she offered, which was, would you like white wine or red wine? Because that's what we do start with.
My guest is Peggy Jennings Severe, and she has written a follow-up book to her first book on Life Talks, and this one she calls Life Talks, The Conversations Continue. Well, you have a section for people who are considering getting married, and then the other end of that, divorce or ending a relationship, and you have some questions about that if you're considering divorce. Am I a better person with or without my partner? And how will my life be the same or different once divorced? Because I know people who remarry, they realize, oh, getting divorced was a bad decision.
Mm-hmm. You know, when I was done with my first book, one of the reasons I wrote a second one is I had more ideas, but also people came to me with, if you write another book, please include this chapter. And this one, my brother said, hey, next time you write a book, he just assumed I would, is include questions regarding divorce. And so I approached it kind of in two different ways. One is because any of us who've been in a long-term relationship, I'm assuming at some point in time, ask themselves, am I better off together or independent of this person? That's just the nature of relationships, the ebb and flow of them. So I broke it up into a section of considering divorce and then choosing divorce, because that's two very different things. Mm-hmm. And questions you can ask yourself, or again, I think better yet, questions to answer jointly when you're together. But considering divorce is serious. It's a game changer, as I mentioned in the introduction. And so to take, and I've never seen anybody take it lightly, I hope not. Mm-hmm. But to really ask some tough questions and to realistically answer them. So the one about how will divorce realistically serve or better my quality of life now and in the future is, okay, let's really look at what are the pluses and what are the negatives, both short term, because sometimes we feel that urge in the short term. But in the long term, we realize that that's not the best choice. Or it may be, but these are the questions, hopefully, that will allow you to make a better decision.
Well, let's say the marriage is going more or less fine, but the conversations are more, because I know when my husband was alive, our conversations, have the dogs been fed? Did the dogs get a walk? What do the dogs need?
The logistics of life.
Yeah, and what gets pushed out of this picture, as much as I love my husband, we really didn't have time for each other like we would have liked. And you have a section in your book, Romance and Sex. And, you know, I guess during your first book, before my husband died, I thought, yeah, Peggy. They always say, yeah, create a date night. Yeah, sure. Who has time for that? And now I realize you are absolutely right. That old advice about, yes, create time for each other is so important.
It is. And I have young coworkers when I was working at Butte and my own daughter and her husband. I'm always nagging at them. Are you making time for romance? Are you making time for dates? Because if you don't get in the habit of it, like you said, life takes over. All the logistics, all the day-to-day take over. And pretty soon you're out of practice. And it feels like you're having to trudge uphill to make it happen, as opposed to it being a kind of a natural thing.
Well, with Thanksgiving coming up, Peggy, there's a section, essay on Thanksgiving. And I would like for you to read that section. This is on page 103 in your book.
I don't know about you, but once the candles are blown out, the leftovers are safely in the fridge, and I have changed into sweatpants, the expandable type, I tend to experience a little Thanksgiving letdown. My belly is full, but often my soul is not. I become a little melancholy and wonder, is that all there is? Or at least I used to. Now I have no excuse for having a less than fulfilling Thanksgiving or any hot holiday or major event for that matter. The reason for the shift is because I wrote the book Life Talks, A Guide to Bringing Back Conversation, and the newest one, Life Talks, Conversations Continue. If you don't know where to start in terms of creating new traditions and building memories, you are not alone. I find that many people are a little reticent to tackle a full-blown team builder with unsuspecting family members and friends. My answer is start with Thanksgiving. As I state in Life Talks, if you're wondering how you're going to introduce conversation starters to your friends and family members because you fear the reaction you might get, then Thanksgiving is the perfect holiday on which to begin. There is, after all, a directive implicit in the word Thanksgiving, give thanks. Here is how you can start this new tradition. Call people to dinner, and as you do, explain that you are initiating a new tradition. Have everyone gather around the table and ask everyone to hold hands, which is optional, while each person shares at least one thing he or she is thankful for. Even the youngest member should be encouraged to participate. They may need a little prompting, but you'll be surprised by what they may say. If that feels too basic or your family already participates in gratitude sharing, I suggest you try another activity, which is also in the book, and is one that my mother started years ago. She would make place cards for the table with our names on them and ask the grandkids to randomly place them around the table. When you sat in your assigned seat, my mother would direct us to look inside the folded place card, where we would find a question that we had to answer sometime before the meal concluded. Her questions tended to be whimsical and fun and included ones such as if you could meet a famous person, if you had unlimited money, or if you could create any kind of theme park. What is great about the use of questions is that there is an unlimited supply of them. If you run out of ideas, ask others for ideas, and no minimum number is required to participate. Whether you're a small family of two or a large one, the benefit is the same, creating opportunities to really connect in both fun and meaningful ways.
Well, you give an example in your own family, and I don't think it happened to have been Thanksgiving, but your little grandson learned. What did he do?
You know, he learned early because one of the things I talk about is always to include all the generations and to include little children, even if you have to prompt them. And we've done that with Iden, who's now four. And last winter, I got a call from my daughter, and she said, "You won't believe what Iden did," the typical parent comment. And when I asked, she said, "Well, this evening, spontaneously," he said, "Mom, Dad, stand up, let's hold hands, and I want us to share what we're grateful for."
Well, that's a nice note to conclude on. My guest has been Peggy Jennings Severe. Her newest book is Life Talks, The Conversations Continue. You can find this and other episodes of Nancy's Bookshelf on our website, mynspr.org. I'm Nancy Wigman.
You've been listening to Nancy's Bookshelf. Our theme music is The Mysterious Barricades by Francois Couperin, performed by Warren Haskell. Nancy's Bookshelf is a production of North State Public Radio.